I remember on our first day of our residency, we were just having all the usual induction talks, and the lead registrar at the time, he did a talk for us, and he said, "Don't ever forget how bad it was when you were working on the wards, because radiology will never be that bad."
Okay, so this is the first key phrase. Will you try to pronounce what you see, gentlemen?
Malignitet can inte uteslutas.
Very good. Do you know what it means?
Can't exclude malignancy.
Exactly.
Joining us in episode number 34 of Röntgenpodden is Jamie and Uzuma from the Radcast team. What are the differences between radiology work in the UK versus Sweden, and what common challenges do we face? How do you avoid being sued, and how do you handle the risk of contrast-induced nephropathy? Stay tuned for an interesting conversation brought to you in cooperation with Teleconsult. Skip to the 11-minute mark if you don't much care for the introductory Swedish ramble. Välkommen till Röntgenpodden.
Jörgen, om jag inte är helt felinformerad så står det nu i din kalender att du ska podda med Per. Är det vårt nya artistnamn eller hur?
Ja, precis. Vi pratade lite om det innan jag tryckte på record här. Podda med Per står det som sagt i kalendern, och det kändes lite grann som någon sån här punkband från 70-talet, typ Jodla med Siv eller så. Så att det kanske är ett lämpligt artistnamn som sagt när vi slår igenom.
Ja, alltså då har vi ju skapat liksom visst C-kändisskap i egenskap av Röntgenpodden, så vi kanske inte ska vara allt för snabba att byta namn, men det är en arbetshypotes till vad vi skulle kunna kalla oss om vi ändå vill göra det i framtiden kanske.
Ja, precis. Ja, vi får fundera på saken om vår artistkarriär som poddare, om den liksom går ut för, då får vi väl börja med punkmusik istället kanske. Ja. Hur är läget med dig? Har du gjort något spännande sen vi hördes sist och sen vi poddade sist?
Ja, det har jag gjort. Jag har åkt skidor. Jag har jobbat jour. Jag har inte gjort... Jo, vi har hållit kurs sen dess också.
Ja, det har
eller
vi
hur? Så det har varit en blandad verksamhet.
Just det. Vi körde ju sjätte upplagan av kursen i basal akutradiologi, och den här gången så var det en digital version. Och vi hade, visst var det 35 deltagare från hela landet.
Stämmer.
Ja, det var kul som vanligt. Jätteroligt att träffa, höll jag på att säga. Vi träffades ju inte annat än digitalt då, men att träffa sig ändå så många duktiga kollegor från runt om i landet. Jag tyckte det var, man får ju lite komplex nästan, för varje omgång så blir ju folk duktigare och duktigare, känns det som. Eller? Är det bara mitt intryck?
Ja, jag tycker också det. Eller så är det vi som blir sämre, men det vill jag verkligen inte hoppas.
Nej, men det är lite som alla runt omkring en ser ut att bli äldre hela tiden. Man fattar inte hur det kommer sig.
Ja, det är obehagligt är det.
Det är obehagligt. Ja, okej. Okay. Nej, men kursen körde vi och åkt skidor har du gjort. Det har jag också gjort faktiskt. Och alla armar och ben och korsband är i behåll för oss båda. Så att det får man väl betrakta som en framgång då kanske.
Ja, man får inte ha så mycket högre krav i vår ålder, utan
nej, precis.
Man får vara nöjd om man kommer hem hel.
Du har kvar alla lemmar. Har du kvar din anställning också i Östergötland?
Ja, det har jag. Än så länge håller jag på att säga. Men det är kanske lite överdrivet. Alltså, nu är jag visserligen sent in, men det här storvarslet som jag antar att du syftar på, som har figurerat i riksmedia nu, det ska ju inte beröra läkare och sjuksköterskor, dock all övrig personal fick vi höra nu i veckan.
Just det, så du är inte en av de 900 som riskerar att åka ut då?
Nej, det är jag inte. 900, det är ju mycket. Alltså om man räknar bort läkare och sjuksköterskor, det här för mig att de sa att det var 11% av arbetsstyrkan som ska få gå. Och det är mycket.
Det är mycket.
Jag hoppas att det åtföljs av tydliga kriterier för vilken verksamhet som inte ska prioriteras, för annars så kommer det bli...
Jag tänkte ju säga det, vad är det som har blivit kommunicerat internt så att säga i urval av de här 900, är det liksom, är alla lovligt byte eller finns det liksom fokus på vissa delar av verksamheten som har störst risk att ryka så att säga?
Det är ju ingen som vet, och jag tänker att det kanske är även om det naturligtvis leder till oro i leden att varsla så pass många, så vill man väl så tidigt som möjligt gå ut med det beslutet, och så får man ta några månader på sig och göra detaljerna klart innan någon faktiskt blir uppsagd, och sen är det där till den här uppsägningstiden då. Mm. Så jag hoppas att det kommer mer information om hur man ska reda det här nu under våren. Mm. Sen är ju då anledningen till att läkare och sjuksköterskor inte är varslade, vill man ju gärna tro, är att vi är en essentiell del av sjukvården. Jag hoppas det finns en sån tanke också, men vi fick se statistik på hur antalet anställda inom olika yrkeskategorier har förändrats sedan pandemin, och antalet sjuksköterskor har ju faktiskt minskat i Region Östergötland.
Okej.
Antalet läkare har förvisso ökat en del, men där är tanken att man istället ska sluta med hyrläkare.
Ja, just det.
Och därmed dra ner på läkarbemanningen och kostnaderna på det sättet då.
Men det du nämner nu, att sjuksköterskorna har minskat, är det i absoluta tal då, eller är det i liksom som andel av antalet anställda?
Det är även i absoluta tal.
Ja. Och läkarnas ökning, det är också i absoluta tal, men de kanske som andel så kanske de inte har ökat.
Ja, det räknar jag inte på. Det är möjligt att de är oförändrade andelar av den totala arbetsstyrkan, fullt möjligt, men i absoluta tal har de ökat då. Mm. Vilket väl har varit en tanke att man ska anställa fler läkare, och förvisso har man väl försökt anställa även fler sjuksköterskor för att kunna minska på den inhyrda personalen, men föga framgångsrikt vad gäller den senare yrkeskategorin då.
Ja, precis. Och det här varslet nu då, det kommer ju liksom i ljuset av lite andra förändringar som vi har diskuterat i podden. Dels de här nya arbetstidsreglerna som ju gör att det går att kräma ur ett mindre antal arbetade timmar per anställd. Och sen då det här nya nationella hyrläkaravtalet som ju, ja, förhoppningen uppfattar jag i alla fall från SKR och arbetsgivarsidan är väl att det ska leda till att fler söker sig tillbaka till en ordinarie anställning. Och så kombinerar man detta med varsel och anställningsstopp. Jag tycker det låter så dåligt genomtänkt. Eller så är det, jag vet inte, det beror på vad slutmålet är förstås. Men om meningen är med det här nya hyrläkaravtalet är att folk ska komma tillbaka, så verkar det ju inte så där jättebegåvat att kombinera det med ett anställningsstopp faktiskt.
Nej, men alltså det är ju flera frågor som sammantaget kan leda till någon form av perfekt storm. Men jag skulle inte tro att det här varslet nu egentligen har så mycket med hyrläkaravtal eller någon uttänkt bemanningsstrategi alls att göra, utan det är helt enkelt att pengarna är slut, som jag förstår det.
Ja, jo, så är det väl förstås. Det som du säger, det är en olycklig kombination av frågor som liksom inte är samordnade. Men ja, vi får väl se.
Sen vet jag ju inte hur det är, alltså i och med att jag anställde i Östergötland så har man ju hört väldigt mycket om det här varslet här och nu, men hur det ser ut på andra håll landet, det vet jag inte, men jag har svårt att tro att den dåliga ekonomin är ett fenomen isolerat till vårt hörn av riket, så att säga.
Nej, det har man ju läst om på flera ställen. Sahlgrenska som ska säga upp folk, och nu bara häromdagen så var det väl rubriker om sjukhusen i Skåne också. Så att det är nog inte så att Östergötland är unika, nej.
Men Röntgenpodden varslar inte, eller hur Jörgen?
Det gör vi.
Ni var kvar båda två.
Ja, det gör vi inte. Vi var först in båda två, så vi sitter säkert i våra stolar.
Det är skönt att ha arbetsrätten på sin sida, tycker jag.
Precis, det kan lyssnarna ha med sig som trygghet. Okej, men du, sen vi poddade sist så har vi inte bara hållit kurs och åkt skidor. Du har ju varit aktiv i poddsvängen också och intervjuat några internationella kollegor till oss.
Ja, det har jag. Alltså, även om jag tror att vi är den enda röntgenpodden i Sverige, så finns det ju fler ute i världen. Inte minst en brittisk som heter Radcast med två kollegor som jag hade en liten intervju med. Och det var ju väldigt spännande. Det blir alltid så en utmaning när man ska hålla intervjuer och liksom rappt formulera sig på engelska. Men det var ett bra samtal i alla fall om ditten och datten.
Ja.
Som jag tänkte att vi skulle lyssna på.
Ja, precis. Jag kunde inte vara med. Jag har lyssnat på intervjun och jag tyckte den var jätteintressant. Det var många så här gemensamma beröringspunkter och sen också vissa saker som skiljer sig åt mellan länderna. Som så där, små detaljer som var intressant att få reda på. Och jag har lyssnat lite på Radcast tidigare. Jag tycker att de gör en jättebra podd och de har många intressanta gäster och också plockat upp en del teman och artikeltips och sådär som de har kommit med. Så det, jag tycker definitivt att det är en podd som man kan rekommendera till alla lyssnare som är intresserade av att lära sig mer och som inte har något problem att lyssna på en engelskspråkig podd heller. Så att, jag tyckte det var ett jätteintressant samtal som sagt. Vad säger du? Ska vi lyssna på det eller vad tycker du?
Ja, men jag tycker vi rullar den. So, for the second time in history, Röntgenpodden is proud to present an English-speaking guest, or in this case, two English-speaking guests. Will you guys please introduce ourselves for the listeners?
I'll go first then. My name's Uzuma. People call me Uzi. I am a radiologist in the UK, head and neck specialist, and I am one third of the Radcast founders and one half of the podcast.
Hi, I'm Jamie, a consultant radiologist. I trained with Uzuma in the UK, but I now reside in Dubai. I subspecialize in MSK, and I am the co-host of Radcast and one third of Radcast as an organization.
Welcome. So who is the last third part of the cast who isn't present today?
The silent third member, Mohammed. Exactly. Mohammed is the brains behind the operation.
Yeah,
he stays out of the limelight.
He's the puppet master. He pulls the strings and we just follow what he says, basically.
Okay, cool, guys. So how long have you been recording a Radcast?
I think our first episode was in June or July 2018. So we've been going at it for a good 6 years now, definitely longer than I ever thought we'd go on when we started. I don't know how many other radiology podcasts there were when we started, like in terms of more casual ones. There were some more sort of educational ones, but I feel like we might have started a bit of a trend because there's a few now, more entertainment radiology podcasts.
Yeah, I think when we started, it was just kind of the big journals, wasn't it? It was like RSNA had their podcasts, there was ECR had theirs, and they were all very much educational. So it was taking an article from the journal and talking through it. So it was kind of quite formulaic and quite serious in that respect. Mm-hmm. Whereas like we wanted to try and do something that was a bit more informal, but also I suppose educational in some way, but maybe like more like current affairs in radiology or new developments in radiology.
And I think that's a great idea. And that's pretty much what I and Jürgen have been trying to do as well. But since we've been around only 5 years, I guess we have to consider ourselves one of those Kappa cats, right?
Improvement. Maybe you improved on what we started.
So how many episodes have you recorded this far?
I think we're just about to put out episode 67, I think, 67, 68. So we do one a month. We decided on that schedule just because we thought it'd be manageable and something we could actually maintain. Sometimes, some podcasts release episodes every week, but that's very difficult to keep up over the long term. So, yeah. One a month, and we've managed to stick to that. Apart from like only a couple of months over that period when we've missed a month, but mostly we've been on schedule, first Friday of every month.
Yeah, I think a reasonable pace is key to be able to continue recording. You know, 1 month after the other, it doesn't happen very much in the world of radiology. You have to wait for a congress or some research or something to
we decided that we wanted to have guests on as well, so instead of it just being always us talking through things, we thought the purpose of the podcast is to is to get some experts in who can then talk in an informal way about their area of expertise that will then be useful for our listeners. So if we were to try and increase the frequency beyond one a month, then getting guests in would be super difficult. And then also you'd run out of material really quickly. Like, there's a lot of stuff happening, but you've got to make sure that you're not always repeating yourself. You're not doing like five podcasts in a row that are on AI. So I think keeping the variety and the making sure that we've got as good selection of guests, it's much easier to do it once a month. And that's before you think about, sorry, about the editing side of it as well. And promoting it, like,
And you record on your leisure time as well, right? It's not part of your jobs.
Yeah, so you just find the time. And now that we're in different countries and there's a time difference, the window of opportunity when we can actually get together and record an episode is very narrow. So if it's in the evening, if we record after work, 5-6 o'clock UK time, I think that'd be, you're an hour ahead of us, then that's just before Jamie goes to bed. So he often ends up recording late at night in Dubai, and he's not someone who likes to be awake.
I'm very much a morning person.
Well, you know, when you accepted my invitation to do a co-production with us, it came with one condition, right? You demanded that this production should be held in English. And actually, between planning this session and actually recording it, I was listening to another podcast discussing history. So I was going to ask you, are you familiar with the battle at Stamford Bridge?
I am familiar with the Battle of Stamford Bridge. That's when the Vikings got defeated, right?
Exactly. I mean, that battle precedes the even more famous battle at Hastings with a couple of weeks. And as you say, the Vikings tried to invade, but they were defeated. Mm. And we're listening to this podcast. I just thought that had they won, we might have been recording in Scandinavian, but they didn't.
Interesting. Way to think about it. What language did the Vikings speak? Which one was it? Amalgamation.
Actually, I think the ones defeated at Stamford Bridge were Norwegian, but I mean,
okay,
that's pretty similar. I would be able to understand a Norwegian podcaster without having to use my English, I think.
I mean, we could try and do it in Swedish, but I don't think it'd be very good for your listener count, to be honest. I think people might turn off after the first 30 seconds.
No, I mean, you won. You got your empire, Rule Britannia and all that, and we're a small country in the northern periphery, so we'll just go ahead recording in English. However, I think that there are some phrases that are paramount to radiology in Sweden, and I think we should discuss them, and you could try to pronounce them. Can you see my shared screen by now?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, so this is the first key phrase. Will you try to pronounce what you see, gentlemen?
Malignitet kan inte uteslutas.
Very good. Do you know what it means?
Can't exclude malignancy. Idea.
Sorry?
Can't exclude malignancy?
Exactly.
Ah,
Is this a phrase appreciated by your referring clinicians if you use it in your reports?
I mean, sometimes it's just correct, you know. Like, you don't want us to be guessing. And
it feels so defeatist when you say it, though, doesn't it? There is a bit of disappointment that comes with having to say it.
Exactly.
I know you sometimes have to, you want to be able to answer the question, and sometimes when you can't, it is a little bit frustrating.
Mm. I mean,
it's not a phrase I use that often. I'll say I do tend to try and come down one way or the other. I think the clinicians would rather you be confident and make a call and be wrong one in 20 times than sit on the fence on every scan.
Yeah, I think that if you use it seldom, the clinicians will probably understand that this certain case is hard. And they might have to do something else, like if it's a CT, you can do an MRI or something else. But if you use it all the time, then everyone will just think that you don't dare to say anything about anything.
Then your reputation is that you're that guy.
Yeah,
Yeah, you're
pretty
that guy who
much.
sits on the fence all the time.
We all know that guy or gal, right?
Yeah, well, and to be honest, that guy is usually quite happy, usually quite content, not getting sued, low indemnity, you know. Whereas us risk takers, we're the ones who are getting sued all
Is the prospect of
the
getting sued like an issue in Great Britain?
Yeah,
It's
I
interesting.
definitely think. I think when you speak to consultants who are approaching retirement, and then you speak to ones who are newer to their consultant careers, there's definitely a difference in how defensive people are in their phrasing. Things have definitely got more litigious over time.
I may be naive, maybe I've not been burnt yet, but I think the fear, and this is famous last words, I'm going to get sued next week, but I think the fear of litigation might be, it seems overblown because people make mistakes all the time. We have like meetings, we call them realm meetings, I don't know what you call them in Sweden, but where we go through cases and discrepancies, and you see all sorts of like fairly not major misses, but people make mistakes and people aren't getting sued left, right, and center. So I think it has to be a fairly major error for you to actually get in any trouble. And any mistakes you make while working in the hospital, you're covered by the trust sort of indemnity. I'm using these big words. I'm not sure whether the Swedish listeners will know what indemnity is. Just because of the language barrier, but yeah, you're covered by their sort of legal framework, so you're never going to be personally held accountable for any mistakes. So yeah, I sometimes wonder why people are so scared to actually like make decisions and make mistakes, but maybe that's because I haven't been stung yet.
Then the private sector is very different though, isn't it? Because you have your own malpractice insurance, and you don't have the legal team of the hospital to help you out. You are kind of alone in that respect if you make a mistake. And private institutions are probably going to be tougher on radiologists who make chronic mistakes. There's certainly where the company that I work for, they will monitor a certain percentage of everyone's work. So a chunk of your work will be double reported without you knowing it. And if there's stuff that's flagged up there, then they have a process for how to deal with it. And you find as well that the customers, so the hospital sites that we work with, they have variable levels in terms of like what they will complain about. Some hospitals will complain quite quickly, whereas others, their threshold is that bit higher. And also for those customer sites, they are well within their rights to stipulate that they don't have that a radiologist shouldn't report for them anymore. So yeah,
I didn't know that.
yeah, so if someone misses something and the radiologist in the hospital replies back saying they've missed something, I don't want them to report for us anymore, then you can't argue the toss. You just have to do what they say because they are the customer. So yeah, the bar is slightly different once you leave the health service.
And also because you're paying for your own medical malpractice or indemnity insurance, it's also a lot more expensive if you do make a mistake, because then your premiums go up, and they're quite expensive normally, just as the baseline.
Well, remember we had a guest on our podcast who was talking about a costly mistake that he made with a, was it an MR spine? But he called it as just like a degenerative disc, but it was actually TB discitis.
Oh.
And then his malpractice insurance went up to like £50,000. I'm not sure what the conversion is to krona, but yeah, it's a lot of
Yeah, it is a lot of money.
money.
And you know, I heard in an American context, obviously everyone makes mistakes, right? But radiologists are like considered pretty easy prey for the lawyers, because everything we say can be corrected afterwards. I mean, the X-rays will be found in an archive somewhere, and you can always find some super expert who will state that that was...
Yeah, some traitor.
Yeah. Some traitor.
Under the bus. Yeah.
I was chatting to a radiologist a few months ago who was saying that he had been written to about a scan that he reported in 2014, so 9 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, the lawyers had got in touch with him.
I'm not sure whether I think being sued is a good way to learn something, but double reading cases is probably something you should do to an extent, I think, in order to like know your colleagues and identify risk individuals who might be better off doing something else.
we barely have enough radiologists in the UK to single read, let alone double read. I think
that's an interesting topic as well. We're too few in Sweden as well. However, the economy has been bad for the last years, so now a lot of our counties is discussing to save money and cut costs. So what's the economy like in Britain?
It's so fascinating because, I mean, it seems that every Western economy is rubbish at the moment, and everyone thinks that their situation is the worst. Like, everyone in the economic situation in the UK is not great, and I think we've just officially gone into recession. And it's always spoken about as if, like on the continent, they're doing much better. But I've been hearing more news recently about countries that I thought were doing well economically, and they're also struggling. Like Germany at the moment is sort of going through a tough time. My sister lives in Berlin, and she's saying there's all sorts of economic and social issues kicking off. So yeah, I think everyone's sort of going in the same direction. And yeah, that has a direct impact on the health service. It's sort of a long running issue of them trying to cut costs and try and find ways to save money, and that's over the long run resulted in a sort of erosion of the standard of the healthcare service, I'd say, which is leading to all sorts of issues like the strikes and people leaving. Jamie's prime example was someone who has left the UK and now lives in Dubai.
What about the healthcare economics in Dubai?
It
should be better.
Yeah, so they have they do have government hospitals here, but most expats have private medical insurance as part of their job. So there's a booming private healthcare sector over here as well. And actually, I was surprised at how cheap the health insurance actually was. I thought it would be like a big chunk of my income, but it's not that expensive when I compare it to, like, I suppose the taxation and national insurance and stuff that I was paying in the UK. Then it's a small part of that, really. I think I was chatting to someone earlier. So for to have like top tier cover to get you into the best hospitals here, for a family of three is about £500 a month. Mm. So yeah, and that gets you unlimited access to all the best hospitals here. So it's not as outrageously expensive as I thought it was going to be. But the quality of healthcare is very high. My wife injured her knee, and we called an orthopedic clinic. She was seen like 2 hours later. She had her assessment with the surgeon, x-rays, assessment with the surgeon to review the films, and the prescription arrived at our apartment before we got home.
Insane.
Yeah.
Insane. Totally insane. For me, it's hard to relate to the costs you're speaking about, whether it's a high or low fee, because in Sweden, almost everything at present is financed by taxes.
Mm. That's a lot of the UK.
It is.
But it seems like I think Scandinavia is known for being quite socialist. How high are your taxes?
That depends on which way you count, but let's say that income taxes is about 35% up to, let's say, 60,000 pounds perhaps, and then it
Okay.
soars to 50 or 52%.
So,
So in an international context, it is pretty high, I think.
I suppose it depends what you're getting for that money. Do people in Sweden feel that they're getting good value for their taxes?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, this is like a political discussion, right? And I think traditionally most Swedes have been agreeing that these high taxes are worth paying. But during this recent economical crisis, I hear more and more complaints about how much taxes do we have to pay in order to get reasonable health care and care of the elderly and school and, all these tax-funded
Yeah.
issues.
Yes, it's all the problem is it's all sort of going up, isn't it? And there's no end in sight. There seem to be an endless amount of things which need to be paid for.
Yeah,
And
there's kind of like the economy side of it, but then also people are living longer with chronic conditions, and also there's new treatments coming out for things. You know, 5-year survival for cancer is improving almost like in all cancers, and there's novel therapies, and all these things are so expensive that just the cost of delivering healthcare has gone up. There's more conditions that are being treated now than they used to be. So I think even excluding the economic climate, the cost of healthcare is just higher.
And people are living longer, but not necessarily healthier. They say like lifespan's increasing, but health span isn't. So you just have people who are being kept alive with dozens of chronic conditions at the end of their life, and that's whereas in the past, for better or worse, they might have just just died. Yeah, so that's the thing that puts a significant burden on the healthcare system.
We could discuss so much about this, but then we'll never get to sleep. And as you said, Jamie looks a bit tired. So I think let's move on to the next Swedish phrase of paramount importance, right? Will you try to pronounce this one?
Okay. Are du biktat risken för nyskada?
Yeah, very good. The third word is beaktat, but that's not quite
Beaktat.
a common word. So you'll be excused for not being able to pronounce it perfectly. Actually, this means, are you aware of the potential risk of damaging the patient's kidneys with iodine contrast? Well,
Okay.
that is a thing that traditionally, we've been very cautious about this contrast-induced nephropathy in Sweden and Scandinavia. Is that something you worry about where you work?
Is it even real? Is it a
It's
myth?
kind of gone the other way, hasn't it? It's gone from being something that was like quite strictly enforced to now it's not really.
Yeah, I read an article stating that if such a disease exists, the risk have been boldly exaggerated.
Yeah, I think it was certainly more of a risk with older contrast agents. I think it was to do with their sort of osmolar levels, higher osmolar contrast agents. But you get conflicting messages about this because I thought that the sort of concerns about it had diminished, but in the latest guidelines released by our sort of governing bodies, I think they raised the threshold for when you need to start being sort of concerned about it. So I think before, when I was a junior doctor, it was always 30. The EGFR is always 30. I don't know what the units are, but is it milliliters per minute or millimoles per minute? But now I think it's 40 is the threshold at which you need to start sort of being concerned. So I'm not really
Okay.
sure. Yeah.
Is do you take mitigating measures below 40, or is because 30 was always like the cutoff for when not giving contrast?
I don't think we have a sharp cutoff level, but below 30, we are pretty cautious. And of course, it depends on the patient state. I mean, if there is a realistic chance of the patient suffering from a cardiac dissection, no one really cares about the small risk of kidney damage. But I mean, if it's, I think a lot of patients, like where you're performing a thoracic abdominal scan to check out if the metastasis has decreased on chemo, I think a lot of these patients will not get iodine contrast if the kidney function is too low, and I'm not sure it's a good thing. I do think that we are being a bit too cautious in Sweden, so I thought it would be interesting to discuss it with you guys.
Do you have kind of advice about what sort of EGFR levels or creatinine levels you should be like prehydrating the patients? Because in hospitals they'll have protocol for like whether you just give them like a liter of fluid to drink beforehand, or do they need IV fluids before and continuously, all that sort of thing.
There is a protocol, and it's kind of advanced, pretty new. Before that protocol was published by the Swedish Radiological Society, it was more up to the single clinician to decide. But now you're supposed to, like, ask the patients for diabetes and risk factors, and then you follow the scheme, and then you are told what to do.
I think this is another one where there's a sort of divide in terms of the generations. I find that a lot of the older consultants are more cautious of iodine contrast and induced nephropathy. So they will often say just do a non-contrast scan when they've got the scans. I suppose they're used to maybe just making diagnoses on the basis of plain films. So even a non-contrast CT is good enough for them.
You know, Jürgen and I tend to return to a certain phrase while discussing scientific issues, and that is more research is needed. Okay, let's move on to the final Swedish phrase, guys. Will you try to pronounce this one as well?
Mr. Detta Utredas Jutid.
Yeah, very good. Can't this wait until office hours? Do I have to take care of this while being on call? Do you guys experience a lot of stress while being on call?
The on-calls can be stressful. The on-call frequency at my hospital isn't that bad. So personally, I do 1 day of on-call a month, where which generally means that during the day you're just answering the queries that come through, which isn't that stressful because there's usually a registrar under you who's taking most of the phone calls, and you only get asked about some of the more tricky queries. And then after 5 o'clock, you basically just have to clear off all of the acute scans that have been scanned during the day but not been reported by 5 o'clock. So there are people who are reporting those scans during the day, and any that don't get reported before by five, you have to finish them off. And as soon as they're done, you can go home, and often there's only a few scans left. So technically you're on call until 8 p.m., but you can usually go home. I probably shouldn't say this, I don't know if this is an official call, but you can usually go home a bit before. So that's about one of those a month. And then probably between 3 and 4 weekends a year. And the weekends are very busy. It used to be your responsibility is basically checking the scans that the registrars report, the trainees report. So they're again the first port of call. They report all of the scans as they're done, and then the consultant checks their scans afterwards. So every scan that's done on the weekend, between Friday and Sunday, you basically have to check. So you might end up checking 150 scans across the 2 days. Back in the day, it used to be the consultants could maybe check some scans in the morning, go about their day, do some shopping in the afternoon, maybe come back in the evening just and check some more scans before bed. Whereas now you do find that you're basically at your computer the whole day, just checking the scans as the registrars reporting them. Because yeah, often there are multiple registrars on call reporting, whereas it's just one consultant checking. So the workload for them is a bit more shared out, but for you, you're checking all the scans. So that can be that is quite busy, but it's not that frequent.
The three of us might be too young to have really experienced those good old days you described. How old are you guys?
I'm
35.
34. 34, yeah. How about you?
40.
40. Oh, you don't look it. Very,
Oh, great. Thank
very
you.
youthful. I see you're looking to it. It's because the sun is aging, isn't it? So I imagine because it's the lack of sun. Oh no, I don't know. What's the weather like in Sweden? I want to be
Well,
presumptive.
I think it's pretty English. It's a bit
Okay.
colder. Definitely not like in Dubai, that's for sure.
Yeah, I hope you're wearing that sun cream, Jamie. Don't want to
I
age
know,
prematurely
yeah,
in that.
no, I take sun protection very seriously. Yeah, it's like you realize that the intensity of the sun over here is stronger than back home.
Right.
Doesn't take much exposure to like to really to think, oh no, I need to get into some shade now.
What do you do on calls, Jamie?
Well, I guess it's slightly different for me because I'm effectively doing it live. So I report overnight UK work from Dubai. So there are a few different hospitals that all feed into one system, and then I report that work. So I get the odd phone call, but majority of the referrals that come through are electronic. So I just do the online vetting, and then the scan comes through. And in between the hospital sites and the radiologist, there's an operations team, and they kind of divvy up all the work. So they make sure that the work is being spread out in such a way that it's being turned around quickly. So, like, if they allocate me a trauma scan on like a 90-year-old that's going to take a while, then they'll send more stuff to the other person so that I've not got stuff in my list that's waiting that could be turned around faster. So it's all about making sure that their job is kind of making sure that scans are turned around in a reasonable time frame to make sure we're providing that level of service that we've agreed to. And in terms of the cases, yeah, I guess like it's like I think what I experience is like is different to when I was doing night shifts as a trainee. So the night shifts that I'm doing now are busier and the workload is different. Whereas like previously in those kind of 2 a.m. to 8 a.m. hours, it would be like mainly CT heads and the odd abdomen or aorta. Whereas now, like there's a lot more of these what they call silver traumas. So old people who have had a relatively low impact injury, but they end up doing a full trauma scan on them.
Yeah, for no reason. For
So
no
get a
reason.
lot of that. Yeah,
Reduce
you
the
know.
levels, right? Yeah.
Fall from a chair. They've got a bit of chest wall tenderness, so we'll do a head to pelvis trauma scan. Lots of that, and lots of aortas as well. I think that there's recently been a campaign in the UK called Think Aorta. So yeah, so clinicians have been told to like request aortas. So there's a lot more aorta imaging coming through. The Royal College have actually published some guidance recently to say that we can do a thoracic aorta only, whereas previously we'd protocol like the whole aorta. But I think that's just kind of like to, you know, in light of this new increase in the work. Then specified a couple of clinical indications for when you would do like a whole aorta instead of just the chest. So yeah, lots of old people for full trauma scans, lots of aortas. Yeah, I guess like CTPAs as well. That's something else that we never used to do overnight that just happens overnight now. That's another one that would have waited till the morning. KUBs, that's something else that previously would have waited until the morning, but now they just get done at the time. So yeah, it's definitely the spread has definitely changed. And there's stuff that comes through on my vetting list that I do bounce. I don't just accept everything, even though people expect that because it's like private work, you would accept everything. I do still reject some stuff. And it's very frustrating then if there's something that ends up on my list that I know I would have rejected. Like I had a head, chest, abdo, pelvis, head pre and post contrast as well for a patient that was restaging of melanoma. And that was being scanned at like 3 a.m. That had been scanned at like 3 a.m. UK time. It wasn't even like abdominal pain or chest pain. You know, they hadn't tried to make it sound acute. It was like restaging melanoma for oncology. Like there was nothing about it that meant that it was an acute scan. But yeah, so stuff like that does occasionally come through. And I guess that's because some people just accept everything. Yeah, maybe they should be asking, can it wait for the working day?
Most of the time, the referring clinician at least, you know, try to disguise their cases as a possible intracerebral bleeding or small bowel obstruction.
Yeah. No, this one, there was no attempt to that. It was just blatant. Yeah. And yeah, you don't want to be doing that at that time. And also when you've got all the acute stuff coming through as well, it's something that kind of, it takes up a lot of your time that could be better spent on more patients. And it's something that really should be for a subspecialist as well. Like, do you want an MSK radiologist reporting your melanoma restaging at 3 a.m? Probably not.
Probably not. And I mean, ruling out an aortic dissection is one thing, but then you're supposed to look through the images and find these pulmonary nodules or whatnot.
Yeah.
Or do you wait until the morning to check for other stuff than the clinician asks you for?
Got to get it all. Got to pick up everything, otherwise it's a mess, isn't it? Yeah. And that's one of the problems with all these older traumas as well. A&E requesting it because of the trauma stuff, but obviously there's going to be a lot more incidentals, or not just incidental things that you know that what they are, but there's going to be indeterminate incidental things as well. So, you know, you often end up requesting more imaging off the back of a trauma scan that probably didn't need to be done in someone who's in their 90s.
What do you guys think of playing a little game I call horse or zebra?
Well, like I'm in the circus. This is
here we go.
Yeah, you do know what I mean by a horse and by a zebra, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like when you hear the sound of hooves, you should expect a horse, but sometimes it will be a zebra.
Mm.
And in some of Röntgenpodden's episode, we've been discussing these zebras, but lately we have been finding it more useful to discuss somewhat unusual horses. I mean, cases you still have a fair chance of running across when on call.
Mm.
And this case I'm going to show you, I'm not quite sure if I should count this as a horse or a zebra, and I thought you guys should get to decide. And the case is actually recycled from the Swedish Radiology Week in 2012, where I used it in a competition for residents.
Oh, wow.
And I think I'm mostly into abdominal radiology, and you are into head and neck and musculoskeletal, respectively.
Yeah.
So, of course, this is a chest x-ray. Okay, might be hard, but my plan is to publish these x-rays on Facebook before broadcasting this episode, so our listeners will be able to make guesses themselves. So this patient had been experiencing fever and cough for some days, went to the emergency department, and this chest x-ray was performed.
You still do lateral?
I was going to say, lateral chest. Wow. Oh, this is 2012. Maybe back then.
Yeah, this is an old case, but you don't usually do lateral chest x-rays?
No. Not anymore. Sometimes you do for a problem solving. Every now and again, if I'm feeling fancy.
I think it's probably just it's PHS, and then if there's anything remotely suspicious, then CT.
Yeah,
I
and
think
that's
that's.
something actually we could discuss as well, because I think I don't know whether the clinician knows how easy it is to miss things on chest X-rays, right? I mean, you could always miss something, but if you read on a scan of the head and the state that it's no intracranial bleeding, there probably is no intracranial bleeding. But if you read a chest X-ray and calls it normal, it might be.
Yeah, absolutely. The number of times you see a CT at the same time as a chest X-ray, and there's like massive pleural effusions that you can't see at all on the chest X-ray.
So what do you make of this? Do you see anything pathological?
Is there anything going on? Is there a sclerotic thing in the vertebrae?
Not what I was thinking about. Might be. But let's just say that the radiologist reading this said something about maybe there is an opacity retrocardially. Who knows? Might be infectious. The patient was treated with antibiotics, got better, and returned again. Had another chest X-ray performed. What do you think this time?
Yeah, now there's definitely something going on through the vertebrae.
There is something going on down here.
Yeah, so that's the thing. So is it maybe it's in the lung, maybe it's superimposed through the vertebrae, but it may not actually be in the bone.
Yeah, you see something in behind the heart on the PA.
It had this occurred today, I think a CT would be performed at this stage, but this was quite a while ago, okay? This was in 2012.
Yeah, you had CT in 2012.
Yeah, we had something else as well. We had the archives from the 90s. And this radiologist who read this case started by going through older cases where the patient had been going through multiple chest X-rays during the 90s and onwards, and they had all been showing retrocardial opacities in the same location. The patient had been treated multiple times with antibiotics, and this opacity has partially regradated, but never completely. And the patient had got multiple pneumonias, and they had performed an angiography in the 90s that actually gives this diagnosis, which everyone had been forgetting about in the years following. And when the patient got to the hospital in 2012, no one remembered it.
Is it a
So,
sequestration?
you think it's a sequestration?
If
That's a good
there's a,
guess.
I don't know if there's abnormal vascularity or abnormal aberrant vessels coming from the aorta if they've had recurrent infections.
Very good. I do remember the celiac trunk from the anatomy lesson, but there shouldn't be any vessels coming out of the aorta at this level, at least not this big, right? So this patient had been diagnosed with a pulmonary sequestration causing multiple pneumonias in the 90s, and then 10 years had passed and nothing had happened, and then in the years following 2010, 2011, the patient had started getting pneumonias again. So she was referred to the thoracic surgery unit, and they had to remove this sequestration.
Wow. Definitely a
Good case.
zebra. Yeah. They're
I
always
was
thinking it was
impressed
a.
that you were able to diagnose it. Is it a horse or is it a zebra? What do you guys think?
It's
definitely
Definitely a
a
zebra.
zebra. Yeah, definitely a zebra. I was thinking malignancy, but the sequestration. So I'll give that as a possible differential next time I see a retrocardiac capacity.
It will be interesting to see whether any of the listeners will be able to diagnose this before listening to us. And it will be, I mean, it will be good for your podcast that you're able to diagnose it.
As a sort of, I'll come clean. I do some chest radiology as well. I'm a head and neck and chest, so that wasn't completely out of my field.
The Conversation with Radcast is brought to you in collaboration with Teleconsult, providing radiology solutions to the NHS, private sector, and Swedish hospitals, both for elective reporting with offices in the UK, Spain, Sweden, and with out-of-hours reporting hubs in Bali and New Zealand. Teleconsult provides an opportunity for work-life balance. Our newest hub is located in the Auckland area, with beautiful views of the city and seaside in the thriving North Shore of New Zealand. We offer competitive relocation packages for you and your family. So if you're interested in exploring the opportunity to join our teams in one of our hubs and find out more about the beautiful locations, visit our website www.teleconsult.net to learn more.
So how long's the residency? Because it's 5 years for us.
Yes, it's pretty much. It's 5 years minimum, and I think most residents will be able to make it in 5 years. So pretty similar, I think.
Do you guys tend to sub-specialize, or are you more general in Sweden?
It depends on what setting you're working at. For the time being, I work in two different hospitals, where one is a smaller hospital at the countryside, and there I'm a general radiologist. But then at other weeks, I work at the university hospital, and then I do gastroabdominal radiology. So I think on a university hospital, you're supposed to do some sub-specializing. On smaller hospitals, you're pretty much supposed to do anything. Is it the same where you work?
Similar to that. Radiology here is becoming like really competitive. Everyone sort of is trying to escape the wards and get into radiology, thinking that it's like a nice, easy life. It's definitely easier than being a ward doctor, but is it quite competitive in Sweden?
I wouldn't say that. I think it's easier to get a residency in radiology than it is in surgery, for example.
Oh, that's it now. You're going to have all these British doctors going over to Sweden for their radiology training.
It has gained some popularity in the later years, I think. And there are studies showing that radiologists are among the more happy doctors, considering, you know, work-life balance and stuff like that. So
I remember on our first day of our residency, we were just having all the usual induction talks, and the lead registrar at the time, he did a talk for us, and he said, don't ever forget how bad it was when you were working on the wards, because radiology will never be that bad.
That's so true. Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that do forget that. There's a lot of people that do forget how bad it is when you're outside of the department. And I think that the guys who are working in those other settings are having a much harder time than us now. So that's always stuck with me. James Chambers said that. Don't ever forget. Yeah.
Have you read The House of God as well?
No.
No. What is that?
You should. It's a book by Samuel Shem, I think. Who's a he's not a resident, he's an intern on one of the famous hospitals in America, like badly disguised. And, you know, he starts practicing and he learns that this is not what I thought I would do when I was in school. This is caring for the elderly, and this is not much medicine going on. Very hard to explain, but the most fun about the book is the rules of the House of God, which have been pretty iconical, which like states truths about healthcare, like if you don't take a temperature, you can't find the fever. And he claims that the best medical care is when you perform as much nothing as possible.
It's probably trying to be funny, but that you could there may be some wise lesson to learn from that. I think we definitely intervene too much nowadays and go looking for problems that maybe would never have surfaced. So yeah, I think we need more pragmatism in the healthcare system.
I think so too. And I mean, we were discussing malpractice issues. I think no one ever asks why you took too many lab tests or ordered too many scans.
Absolutely. J Jamie told me that actually. We when Jamie was working in the UK, we would well when we're just when we're reporting X-rays, just going back to the idea of sort of trying not to sit on the fence, I would sometimes, where possible, try to maybe not overcall things. Don't necessarily recall someone for further imaging if you don't necessarily think that if you think that it's not essential. But Jamie said that like no one is ever going to reward you for being a hero, essentially. You're only going to get criticized for the case that you do miss. So basically recall everyone is
That was the lesson learned.
Yeah. But
Exactly,
it's
yeah.
true, yeah, it's unfortunate. And in terms of your podcast, so do you do one a month as well, is it?
When we started making the podcast, we did it when we felt like it, you know, no specific schedule, but the last year we've been trying to perform one episode a month, except for the summer. So we aim to produce one episode in January through May and one August through December.
Okay. And is it generally just you two chatting or how often do you get guests on?
In the beginning, we did more chatting between the two of us, but the episodes we've been recording lately have been very much interviews. It's fun to talk to someone else than Jürgen once in a while as well when recording.
I think it's interesting speaking to the guests. You always pick up some very interesting insights, and you realize that there's so many interesting characters in the industry as well. I really enjoy that side of it.
How many listeners do you have?
Oh, that's the secret, isn't it? No, we probably get probably in the first month of an episode, maybe 600, 700 listens, and then it sort of ticks over from that point. So, I mean, it may not seem like a huge amount to listeners, but I think that's quite good for a sort of quite a niche radiology podcast. So yeah, we overall we've had like I think we're in approaching 80,000 downloads overall. So yeah, I think we've done well. How about you guys?
I think when an episode has been published for a month, about 350 persons will have listened, and then it will continue growing. I think the episode with most listeners are approaching 1,000 by now, and in total, I think 20,000. So we're not as big as you guys, but on the other hand, Swedish is
Yeah,
not.
exactly. Yeah, that's
Yeah.
amazing because yeah, they're all
Yeah.
going to primarily Swedish listeners. So you really sort of crack the market in Sweden. Most of your podcasts, I presume, are in Swedish, right?
Yeah, except for the interview with Paul McCoubrey, we've only been recording Swedish episodes this far.
Okay, yeah. Listen to that episode, it's very good. Yeah. Yeah, he's great.
Do you have a sponsor or something?
No, we haven't we've thought about sponsorship in the past, but we've never got round to it. I don't know. I'm sort of I'm in two minds about sponsorship, I think. It was good to sort of do it just for the fun of it. But then equally it is a big time and resource commitment. So sometimes you think sponsorship would be a perfectly reasonable thing to try and get.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think because we in the in this in the like the whole kind of like podcast space, our listener numbers are so small that how appetizing are they to sponsors? And then there's always the issue then around like editorial control and what sponsors would stipulate in terms of the advert and the type of episode that it's on with, you know, who, when, you know, how long the advert has to be, all these other things. So, I mean, we have occasionally done adverts for courses where we've been given a discount code that people can use, you know, for like exam revision courses, that kind of thing. So it's stuff that is like specifically relevant to our listeners as well. But we've only maybe done that once or twice. It's not something that we like actively go out looking for. We prefer to just keep the content like as authentic as possible, really.
I think you probably need like 5,000 listeners a month in order to even start thinking about like being attracted to sponsors, I think.
Yeah.
And I think it's difficult to grow a radiology podcast to that size because it is quite a small niche. Have you ever thought about...
unless you're prepared to commit a lot more time to it and to really push the promo and stuff, I think that it's... To get 5,000 listens, then you would have to be getting a large chunk of the market, really.
We're sponsored by the teleconsult company now. Jürgen has been working for them for a couple of years. Yeah. We've only tried that for like 5 episodes, and they have had this small advertisement. And we, you know, like in the beginning of the podcast, we state that this episode is sponsored by a teleconsult, and then in the middle of it they state that they are hiring or whatever.
Oh, wow. Okay,
that's cool. Yeah,
you don't get rich by running a sponsored podcast though, but you can pay for some of the equipment
do they want to kind of have a listen to the episode before it goes live? Do they have any sort of requirements or restrictions?
We did one interview with them about working on Bali, and then they were given the chance to listen, but otherwise they don't really, you know, we simply inform them on what we will do an episode about, and if they want to they can change their advertising message, but they haven't been doing that a lot.
Interesting.
It was kind of fun when someone asked if they could sponsor a podcast because, as you said, I had never been expecting that since it's such a small niche and that few listeners. So we will see. Maybe it's a short-time thing, but it...
No, well, I suppose for them, if you have like a captive audience of like their target market, then it does make sense if you have 300 Swedish radiologists listen to your podcast every month, like as a minimum, and a few of those go and work for that company, then I'm sure the sponsorship will pay itself back quite easily.
Yeah, I think so too. If they can hire just one or two radiologists, they will probably be happy.
Have you ever thought about putting your podcast on YouTube and doing video episodes? Because you have a lot of visuals here on the Zoom, so it seems like a waste for the audience not to see
presentation. You know, Jürgen is using social media a lot and publishing stuff on Instagram and Facebook. I'm not very much of a social media user, so I haven't been thinking. Are you guys planning a YouTube channel?
We do have a YouTube channel. It's not for the podcast. It's mainly like our other educational stuff.
There's a few educational videos on there.
Yeah, but none of us are particularly social media people, which is something that has probably held us back over the years, because we find it difficult to sort of self-promote our material, and most of the growth on our socials has all been sort of organic from people just listening to the podcast and following us. We've never really been people who've really pushed the social media side of things, just because personally it's not something that I find appealing.
No, it does take some time to publish things as well. We usually try to publish things that we will discuss in the following episode, like a potential horse or zebra. And Jürgen has been... is the word bingo something in English?
Bingo. Yeah, the game. Yeah, yeah.
The game, you know, the you're game. Supposed to yeah, check yeah, out...
Yeah. Yeah.
Jürgen this Christmas posted a Christmas bingo with if you were on call during Christmas, you could mark certain events.
Scenes. Oh, that's cool. Brilliant.
That's a great idea.
Of things
you
happening.
Guys put in a lot of background work, a lot more than us. We just sort of approach the guest and we do. I feel like our podcasts are probably maybe a bit more scripted than yours. I think you guys seem to be more just freestyling off the top of your heads, but yeah. But other than that, we don't do much of this other preparation that you guys do, but it's very cool.
Well, on the other hand, we do not prepare ourselves that much before starting to talk to each other. We can do that, you know, by experience, I guess.
Yeah.
And sometimes it will sound good and sometimes it will sound strange, but then we just do a re-recording.
Yeah, we have found actually that the episodes that myself and Jamie just record between us, we call them rambles episodes, Radcast rambles. People tend to like those probably as much or more than when we have guests on. So if we get lazy, we could just turn it into a podcast of us two, just catching up every month, maybe.
But I've been noticing a similar thing when I listen to podcasts. You know, you start to feel like you know the podcasters.
Yeah.
And actually, the podcasts I listen to, I prefer to listen to the familiar voices discuss things between themselves over interviews.
Yeah. Yeah.
I consume probably about 30 hours of podcasts a week. And yeah, I think you listen to people that you like and that you find relatable and that you trust. So yeah, I think that's the main thing actually about doing a podcast. People listen to you, they like you, and then the actual content is secondary. If your authenticity is important, actually.
I think authenticity is important, definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, I think this material will be enough for one episode of
Radiology
of Röntgenpodden.
Yeah, it's been great. Thank you for having us on.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been brilliant.
Nice. I'm pretty sure this is not the last time we will hear from each other one way or another. Maybe we could like grab a beer on the RSNA or the ECR or something like that, if we happen to be there.
Definitely. That'd be great to meet.
But it's been really good that you would be guests on our podcast.
Thank you.
Jaha Per, det tycker jag var en jättebra intervju som du har gjort, väldigt intressant. Trots språksvårigheterna så tycker jag att det fanns många takeaways, för att använda engelska, från intervjun. Och dessutom så måste jag ju säga att dina eventuella språksvårigheter med engelska, de kan nog inte mäta sig med gästernas språksvårigheter på svenska, som du ju satte dem på prov på. Så att,
det finns grader i helvetet.
Precis. Och också intressant då, det här att det skulle vara lättare att få ST på röntgen i Sverige. De förutspådde ju att det skulle komma massa brittiska radiologer till Sverige. Så nu har du ju hjälpt dem med lite praktiska fraser på svenska som de kan använda sig av.
Pratar man inte om British invasion när det gällde popmusik på 90-talet? Det kan ha varit en helt annan era. Jag känner min okunnighet. Men en brittisk invasion som bemannar ST-leden på landets mindre kliniker, det kanske kunde vara något.
Ja, det kanske kunde vara något, ja. De gillar ju att bygga imperier, så att de kanske kör ett radiologiskt imperium som sträcker sig till Skandinavien också. Vi får väl se. Men som sagt, det var många såna här gemensamma beröringspunkter som ni diskuterade. Jag satt faktiskt och skrev ner på en liten lapp här så att jag skulle komma ihåg saker vi kunde ta här i eftersnacket. Och en sån där sak som jag verkligen blev förvånad över var att de inte tar sidobilder på lungröntgen. Det känns ju så här.
Nej, men eller hur? Alltså, lungröntgen är ju så vanligt så man lever ju någonstans i tron att det här är standardiserat i hela världen.
Ja.
Och så sitter man där i Eksjö i 10 år och skriver att här kan vi minsann inte kvantifiera pleuravätska närmare för patienter kan inte ställa upp på flanklägesbilder. Så flyttar man till Östergötland och flanklägesbilder är ingenting vi jobbar med. Däremot så behöver man väl inte göra CT hela tiden. Man klarar sig med vridningar ibland. Så man får se de där lungorna från flera håll.
Ja, men eller hur?
Nej, men det tyckte de inte heller.
Nej, men det var så lustigt. Har ni en sidobild? Ja, den var från 2012. Så då tog man väl fortfarande det. Typ. Men ja, när jag tänker efter, om man tittar på en lungröntgen så nog hämtar man större delen av den information man väger in i utlåtandet från frontalbilden jämfört med sidobilden. I alla fall gör jag
ja,
det.
Handen det gör på hjärtat. Man ju. Men bortsett från bedside-sidobilden som jag tycker inte tillför något.
Nej, det håller jag med.
Så vill jag gärna ha sidobilden av lungorna också.
Ja.
Och jag vet kollegor som skulle tala sig varma för att även på bedside kan man lösa många problem med sidobilder, så vi får väl konstatera att fler åsikter behövs inte, men möjligen mer forskning.
Ja, det är nog så. En annan sån där bra term de hade, det här silver trauma, alltså trauma ser typ på en äldre patient med ett litet trauma, typ ramlat från en stol eller snubblat på en tröskel eller sådär. Det var en bra term, silver trauma, den kanske man skulle börja med, även på svenska.
Alltså jag har ju min egen term, röntgen heltant ibland, du vet, en dement stackare som har ramlat och man vill ha röntgen av bäcken och båda höfter och lårben, knä och fotled på ena sidan kanske.
Ja, ja precis. Men det
kan vara rimligt om det är någon som inte kan tala för sig. Men när man talar om det i sammanhanget trauma-DT eller trauma-CT, då är det väl mer ett fenomen man helst inte tycker vi ska hålla på med. Eller
nej, men absolut. Och sen kan jag uppfatta kanske på sättet som de förde diskussionen att det nog kanske är vanligare där ändå att vi är lite mer restriktiva med att göra den typen av undersökningar i Sverige kanske, även om det förstås skiljer mellan olika sjukhus. Det har ju jag också upplevt att man är olika liberal med att göra stora utredningar vid små trauman. Så. Nej, men som sagt, den där
vi termen har ju trots allt nationella kriterier som någonstans talar om vad som är ett rimligt krav på skademekanism för att en trauma-CT ska kunna bli aktuell, och det kanske sållar bort den och annan, vad vet jag.
Jo, men så är det faktiskt, och det kanske är så att sen de kom att det har blivit lite mindre vildvuxet och lite mindre vilda västern i det avseendet. Så.
För länge sedan kom jag ihåg en kollega på kirurgen sa att det är så skönt att ha en multitrauma-CT, för om den inte visar något då kan man med gott samvete skicka hem patienten, och det var väl inte riktigt det som var tanken, va?
Nej, det är väl inte det. Men sen, ja, man kan ju på ett sätt förstå det tankesättet också, om det är ont om vårdplatser och så. Men nej, det var väl inte riktigt så den platsen som traumasetet skulle ha i utredningen. Nej. En annan sak jag tänkte på, om vi ska gå mer på likheter, det var det här som kom spontant från gästerna där i början, att de tror att kliniker uppskattar radiologer som vågar sätta ner foten men har fel ibland mer än sådana som alltid ska liksom reservera sig och uttrycka osäkerhet i sina svar. Och det är ju någonting som vi har pratat om en del i podden och som vi också brukar försöka trycka på i kurserna. Och det tror jag verkligen stämmer. Så det var ju intressant att de var inne på samma spår där, tycker jag.
Ja, det var de. Och det hade varit intressant att ställa samma fråga till en amerikan, tänkte jag på. Vi pratade lite om det här med medico-legala aspekter med dem också. Mm. I USA så är ju risken att bli stämd betydligt större, inte bara jämfört med Sverige utan jämfört med Storbritannien också då, uppenbarligen. Det hade varit spännande att se om de hade samma syn på den saken i USA, där det kan, tänker man sig, löna sig i rätten att trots allt ha garderat sig för att det kan vara något helt annat.
Ja, precis. Nej, då, det, där är tänket säkert annorlunda. Men och, som du säger, då känns det kanske som att det brittiska systemet skulle vara någon form av mellanting mellan det skandinaviska och det amerikanska. Då. Men det, i just det här resonemanget så verkar de ändå luta mer åt tänket som vi förespråkar då, att det, man har större nytta av de radiologiska utlåtanden om de faktiskt säger någonting, även om det är fel ibland, än om de alltid är vaga, så att säga.
Så. Och så tänker säkert amerikanska kirurger också. Mm. Möjligen i ännu högre grad eftersom de vet att radiologen har en större risk med att ha fel.
Ja, jo, så är det ju. Så är det säkert. Ja, okej. Okay. Men du, vad tänkte jag mer på? Jo, de pratade om det, eller när ni diskuterade upplägget av avsnitt och sådär, att de körde sina ramble-avsnitt. Alltså när de själva sitter och babblar. Det gör ju vi också ibland.
Det var ett bra ord för det, för jag har tänkt på det. Alltså, vad ska vi kalla de avsnitten som inte är intervjuavsnitt, utan ja, bara har egna diskussioner och stående punkter och så.
Ja, men precis. Det var väl en jättebra term. Den får vi väl ta till oss och använda framöver när vi ska benämna våra egna babbelavsnitt. Det blir ramble-avsnitt helt enkelt.
Ja, babbel eller pladder. Du brukar ju vara en varm vän av översättningar.
Mm. Babblarna är ju taget som term redan, så det kanske är copyright-skyddat. Annars skulle vi kunna kalla oss för babblarna. Du får vara Bobo och jag får vara Babba eller vad de heter.
Ja, men ska vi säga pladderavsnitt istället? Och ska vi inte på något sätt försöka få lyssnarna att tycka till om vad vi ska göra för typ av podd? Vill man ha pladder? Vill man ha intervjuer? Och i så fall vilka intervjuer? Eller vad,
ja,
vad finns det efterfrågan på?
Det skulle jag tycka var väldigt kul att få lite feedback på vad lyssnarna tycker är intressant. Vill ni att vi ska ha gäster eller vill ni att vi ska prata, eller är det bra med någon typ av blandning däremellan? Vi får väl lägga ut en fråga kanske på Instagram eller Facebook och hoppas att vi får lite respons där. Och annars så får vi väl helt enkelt fortsätta att köra efter eget huvud.
Det tycker jag, Jörgen. Och du skulle lägga ut någonting annat i cyberspace också. Intressant.
Mm. Precis, då tror jag att du syftar på att vi planerar för nästa upplaga av kursen i basal akutradiologi som vi har nu synkat med alla våra duktiga och trogna medarbetare till att boka in i vecka 42. Och vi har ännu inte lagt upp anmälningsformulär och så, men det kommer att ligga uppe när vi släpper det här avsnittet. Så att när ni hör detta, då kan ni gå in på hemsidan som heter akutradiologikursen.se och boka en plats till höstens upplaga av kursen i basal akutradiologi om ni är intresserade. Och vi har ju tidigare sagt att vi har som målsättning att köra varannan kursomgång digital och varannan fysisk, och eftersom den senaste var digital så borde ju kursen i höst bli fysisk, men nu eftersom det är sån allmän kris vad gäller ekonomi så har vi väl sagt att vi gör ett undantag i den här systematiken. Så vi kör en digital kursomgång i höst också. För det blir ju ändå lite billigare för regionerna än att skicka iväg folk till främmande ort med resa och boende och sådär. Så det blir en digital.
Ja, och här har ju deltagarna tyckt till också i form av en omröstning som jag satt och bläddrade fram här. 64,3% skulle föredra en digital kurs. 25 skulle föredra en fysisk.
Mm.
Och så fanns det några sådana här mellanmjölksalternativ också. Jag vet inte riktigt, eller jag kan tänka mig det ena eller det andra och så vidare.
Ja, precis. Nej, men det är ju, finns ju för- och nackdelar med allt, och av ni som lyssnar, det finns säkert personer som har gått både den digitala och den fysiska kursen, och det är alltid roligt att träffa folk på riktigt och det ger liksom en annan dynamik i diskussioner och sådär. Men ja, läget är som det är, så att nu kör vi en digital omgång nästa gång helt enkelt. Vecka 42 alltså.
Och innan dess så ska vi väl få ut en hel drös poddavsnitt, hoppas jag.
Ja, det hoppas jag. Vi har ju en hel del i pipeline faktiskt. Hur mycket vågar vi avslöja? Vi har inte bokat in något sådär stenhårt riktigt än, men vi har ju ganska konkreta planer ändå.
Det har vi. Vi har flera intervjuer där intervjuoffrerna är positiva till att vara med, men där kalendersynkroniseringen har varit svårare än vi trodde.
Mm.
Kanske blir nästa avsnitt ett intervjuavsnitt. Kanske blir det ett pladderavsnitt. Det vågar inte jag säga, Jörgen. Är det en lämplig cliffhanger att avsluta podden med kanske?
Ja, jag tycker det. Och så får vi lämna åt lyssnarnas fantasi och förhoppningar ända fram till nästa avsnitt kommer. Och fram till dess så får vi väl säga ha det gött och på återhörande.